Welcome. This is the panel on the Internet in China. Now, I've been reviewing some of the figures. Of course, whenever one starts looking at statistics having to do with China, the numbers are always big. Whenever one looks at statistics having to do with the Internet, the numbers are always big. When you look at statistics having to do with the Internet in China, there's a multiplier effect, and statistics are actually overwhelming. In fact, I did a little bit of math last night, and with over 300,000 people reputed to be on the Internet in China today, and many have touted Moore's Law and the doubling of processor speed every 18 months, they're now talking about a doubling of Internet usage every 18 months. And if my calculator doesn't lie, that means within 10 years, we may well have more Internet users in China than there are people. Of course, the marketing opportunities there are manifest. That's part of what we'll hear about today. Some of the issues we can expect to broach today include certainly some of the hard numbers about what's going on with the Internet in China, how quickly we can expect it to grow, who we expect to use it, how the usage is affected. Language issues, which we primarily see it in English, what some people say, oddly, is the lingua franca of the Internet, or in Chinese. Commercial issues, of course. What will be the drivers? Will it be banner ads, the way many seem to think is the way that the Internet is growing in the United States? Will it be through the sale of products, through the sale of soft products, financial derivatives, or other information delivered over the net? There are also, of course, issues of venture capital and strategic alliance. If one wants to get into the market there, how exactly do you go about doing it? And finally, issues of content. How do the content regime there differ from anywhere else? And how much does it impact the growth or the use of the Internet there? So with us, we have a distinguished group of panelists. I will introduce them all at once right now. First with us is Dr. Dennis Simon, Director of China Strategy at Anderson Consulting in San Francisco. Before then, he was Professor of International Business and Technology at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. And before then, he was Professor at the Sloan School of Management and Technology. Welcome. Second, we have Mr. Savio Chow, General Manager of Netscape for Asia, responsible for North Asia. He served at Lotus from 1995 to 96. He was General Manager of Lotus China, and also worked for IBM. Third, we have Mr. Randy Salim, Director of International Development for Yahoo, and has been working with them since April of 96. Currently oversees new business development, both for Asia and Latin America. And before then, please hold your applause until the end of the introduction. Before then, had worked for the Economist Group, the people behind the well-known magazine, The Economist, as Director of New Business Development for the Asia-Pacific Publishing and Conference Group in Hong Kong. And finally, Mr. Peter Yip, co-founder and Executive Vice Chairman of the China Internet Corporation. I would submit that whatever group owns the rights to www.china.com is a group to be listened to. Mr. Yip's group is that group. And right now, he's working on $110 million worth of joint ventures and projects, including alliances with Netscape and Pointcast. Before working with China Internet Corporation, he had started his own business, which he sold to MCI. So welcome to all of you. The order in which I introduced our guests is actually the order in which they have agreed to speak. The plan is to have them speak for 5 or 10 minutes, maybe a few questions within the panel then, afterwards some other questions, and then we'll throw it open to the audience for what I'm sure will be many interesting questions. So with that, let me turn it over to Dr. Simon, who has several slides to introduce the subject.
Thanks very much. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for coming. And the presentation I'm going to make to you today really comes about from what we might call the demand side of the equation in terms of internet development in China. That is, it's through our consulting work in China, working with both domestic clients and multinational clients, we started to see really the role that internet might play in terms of overall business development in China. And that includes working with PC manufacturers, includes working with Chinese enterprises, and includes working with retail entities, both foreign and domestic in China. And so really, it is much more of a demand side look. And so my perspective will clearly be from that, that standpoint. Okay. One of the things that we started to see is not only, as we just said, how fast the internet is growing, but one of the things that I think that we're going to see as far as the internet in China is that it's going to play a role, we believe, that is somewhat akin to the role that was played by the railroads in the United States in the mid-1800s. That is, that it's going to be an integrating mechanism in terms of the overall economic development of China. In fact, one of the most fascinating things I think that we're going to see happen is that China's information infrastructure is going to integrate the Chinese economy at a faster pace than the physical infrastructure actually is going to do. And the reason for that is very simple. That is, that the massive investments that are required to build that physical infrastructure are going to create basically a long-term development plan that's going to be needed to build those airports and those roads and those railroads, et cetera. But the information infrastructure is being put in as we speak, and basically that information infrastructure is growing much faster than the pace of the physical infrastructure. So that we can see at the end here, the internet subscribers have grown now. The numbers vary. We believe the number of actual internet users or internet subscribers is well over 1 million, and it's growing very, very rapidly in China. And so, again, you'll hear a lot of numbers talk about today, but I think we want to understand that not everyone who seems to be registered just counts as one unit in terms of looking at the numbers of who actually plays the game of using the internet in China. Now, it's very simple. The Chinese government has committed itself to building a national information highway, basically that they claim is going to be second to none in the world. And that means that they have to invest a lot of money. Estimates are that they're investing somewhere near $40 billion in building this national backbone and building this infrastructure. And that we think again that there really is a two-edged approach to the building of this. One is the kind of top-down approach where the government is playing a central role through something called the Golden Projects, and I'll talk about those in a minute. The second is the bottom-up, and that is that small players are starting to get into the game in terms of internet service providers and resellers. Foreign companies are coming in, and we're starting to see both the kind of development coming from two ends, and I think that's what's creating the kind of rapid pace of development that we're seeing. The key here, as I said, is this Golden's Project. We started off a number of years ago with the three Golden's Projects, Golden Bridge, Golden Carve, Golden Customs Project. Now we have more than 20 Golden's Projects. They are all different functionally related Golden's Projects designed to create nationally integrated information communication databases and communication mechanisms for everything from information exchange to commercial exchange. And so these things are already starting to percolate, and some of them are moving much faster than others. There have been a number of multinational companies that have gotten involved in these projects. But if we want to look at the government-engineered part of this, you have to focus on these Golden projects to see exactly what is being accomplished. Now, I think the key to the growth of the internet in China is going to be what we call the small and medium enterprise market and also the home market. What I call kind of the role played by the increasing penetration of the PC, or what some people might call the ninth precious treasure. Those of you who come from China know that it was very common that for people going abroad, they had to have the eighth precious treasure, VCRs and TV sets and refrigerators. Well, the ninth precious treasure, everyone believes, is the PC, and if you're Ford from General Motors, it's going to be the automobile, some people believe. But for the ninth precious treasure, at least, you're starting to see companies now really attack the home PC market and small business market now in China. It ranges from Intel sponsoring and AMD and Cyrus sponsoring, for example, PC fairs on the weekends in order to establish or to generate or to stimulate interest among general populations to buy personal computers, all the way up until the development of now internet cafes in various cities all throughout China. Estimates are now that the PC market will reach about 10 million by the year 2000. but that's a very conservative estimate. Most likely it's going to be much closer to 13 or 14 million sales by that same time period. So some people may say that's a very optimistic viewpoint, but actually as the pace things are growing and the development of domestic providers and the decline in the prices of personal computers, it's very likely that we're actually going to reach that range in that. So over 10% of the urban population will have personal computers by the year 2001. That's an amazing number. Combine that with the fact that how fast the telecom infrastructure is growing, indeed, we're on the verge of a real radical information revolution in China. Now, the reason why this all takes on importance is not because of this communication, but because of the impact it's going to have on business, and in particular on electronic commerce. And I think this is really where the key is to be found of the role of the Internet in China, and that is we're moving away now in the Internet China from this general publishing, web ad kind of transaction to really commercially based kinds of interactions using the Internet. And we're starting to see all of these things. There are various examples throughout China, and others will talk about them more explicitly. Everything from the yellow pages and internet phones to art gallery showrooms, some online databases on a pay-per-use basis, the kind of LexisNexis equivalents in China, newspapers. The sales of PCs didn't work very well initially in China, though again, something may be done in the future to change that. Multinational companies are going to sell their courier services now using internet, and on and on and on. The latest and most interesting thing is the development of the mail order business in China using the internet, involving companies like Lanvin and LLB setting up kiosks in post offices and having joint ventures with the Ministry of Post and Telecom to actually buy and sell products across the Pacific using internet linkages. There's even some talk of putting the Guangzhou Canton Trade Fair on an internet website and actually having post trade fair commercial transactions take place using this kind of mechanism. So things are moving very, very quickly, and the only thing to stop it really right now in some ways is the lack of the infrastructure and also what I would call internet content. And I think, as I told someone before that, if there's one thing that China needs very badly, it's more internet content. If you want to make a lot of money, go to China and invest in internet content. Because that's the one thing that is missing that is going to drive the personal computer market and also is going to drive the movement to even more higher internet penetration. I said here, China's not immune to many of the constraints that confront other countries. A lot of the same problems that are familiar to us in the United States also affect China. Everything from the lack of an integrated national payment system, limited bandwidth, privacy and security. The December new regulations that went into effect obviously imposed some political constraints that we might want to talk about. But in terms of the commercial role that the internet is going to play, I think it's very, very clear that even these regulations that were imposed in December, from our perspective, China still is going to grow very rapidly in terms of the role that the internet will play in e-commerce and in the commercial development of the economy. So I don't really see that there are going to be these kinds of constraints that everyone keeps warning about from the commercial point of view. Sure, internet may not play the social political role that some people hope it will play, but I think if you look at the end, the role of the internet is playing will not be measured in years, but really in months and weeks, you say here. And that is that this thing is going so rapidly, all the kinds of things that we see needed to build the infrastructure, to build the credit card system, to build the financial system to support this are now being in place. And I think the best example is the creation of this National Internet Information Center now that was built last year. That really now is going to help stimulate the development of this mechanism because of the amount of information, the central information repository that now exists in order to educate and familiarize other people who want to join the game. So I guess that there's a bottom line, as I said, everyone wants to come to China to look at the internet and the role it's going to play. I think we're at the beginning of a major revolution, and I think that anyone who's interested in this, this is the time to get involved because it's only bound to grow faster and faster in the years ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that general overview. And actually, I'd like to save questions for you as we get into some of the case studies, take some of these general principles we've just seen, and see how some of our other panelists have been trying to actually put them into practice. So with that, I'd like to turn to Mr. Chow and see what the experience has been for Netscape Asia.
Thank you. First of all, I wish the Chinese audience a very happy and prosperous new year. I'll give you a very brief status of what the current internet market is in China, give you some insight about the usage, and a quick snapshot of an IDC survey about the practices in China. And then I'll finalize the giving conclusion based on Netscape's perception on the business opportunity in China. As you may know, the internet access actually started in 1994 through the Beijing Institute of High Energy Physics. That's the first network that they actually allowed to connect into the worldwide network. In 1996, the government became more aware of the amount of uncensored or uncensorable information flowing freely into China. So that prompted statewide control. Essentially, they basically gave out four ISP licenses to the following organization. First one is the Ministry of Post and Telecom, MPT, that operates the ChinaNet. The second is the State Education Commission, that operates the CERNET. And then the Chinese Academy of Science, they operate the CASNET. And finally, the Ministry of Electronics Industry, MEI, who operates the GBNet. Those are the four official internet service operators inside China as of today. With the recent also some regulation that's been drafted and also been passed and signed by Premier Li Peng, the key factor is all the internet traffic has to go inside or go outside of China has to go through MPT's gateway, so to speak. Essentially, there are two points of gateway, one is based in Beijing, one is based in Shanghai. It's just, again, sense of control that the government tried to impose. For the internet usage, it estimates about thousands of ISP, but I think primarily most of the major ISP is really operated by the provincial PTTs. These are the provincial telephone companies. And each of them, they have less than 30,000 subscribers, which is fairly low in comparison to other countries. And most of the applications are simple email, FTP, or access the web outside of China. And the most advanced sites are primarily on the coastal cities, such as Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen. In regard to content, you also heard earlier, content provision is really in the infancy stage in China. There are about 10 major content providers are mostly state-owned organizations that are attempting to sell what had previously been the internal databases. And the primary customers of these databases are mostly corporate users. So I do agree with Dr. Simon that the content provision business is a big opportunity in South China. That's why companies like CIC has a lot of potential in becoming a dominant player in the market, which you'll hear Peter talk about later in this forum. I just want to give you a snapshot of the recent survey done by IDC, which is conducted in late 1996, which is a bit dated information, but also allows you to get a feel of how companies, especially in the enterprise world, adopting the internet technology. So they have conducted 500 interviews with, I would say, most advanced IT operational companies inside China, both in small, medium, large-sized organizations. And among the companies that get surveyed, 20% said they have access to internet. Among the 20%, only 4% of the company that allow the employees, actually 4% of the employees have access to the internet. 15% of these companies have their own home pages. And again, the most mostly cited applications are email, sales transaction, kind of interesting, information sharing, and customer support and help desk. In terms of the overall budget on IT spending, it's less than 10% is actually budgeted for internet spending. There's also very interesting asking about the vendor perception about which companies will have the most influence in the internet business. I would cite the top five companies. These are Intel, IBM, Netscape, Sun, and Apple, which is sort of in a way it's interesting, which also tells you the branding is very important in China to do business, especially in technology sector. From the Netscape point of view, China is a huge market. As you can see, data center turns out the amount of PC shipment annually, as well as the existing install base, is a big, big market for any software or IT company for China. We've done pretty well, growing from 96, 97, revenue-wise probably 5 to 6 times. And most of the revenue comes from actually server sales rather than browser. Since we actually announced recently that we're going to give away browser for free. The market share is also very interesting. Recently, a survey done by Far Eastern Economic Review, they said in China, our market share is actually around 65 to 70%, which is much higher than in the U.S. Primarily, I believe, is the marketing that we've done through the internet, because we haven't set any operations inside China yet. For our company, in the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to be focusing on, I think, two main areas. I think one is still helping China to do the infrastructure building in terms of getting up the internet access, and also the value-added network. And e-commerce is being a very tight segment inside China. And many organizations, ministries are building their e-commerce network. And recently I had a conversation with a group that's sort of interesting. This is coming out of necessity, not really a fad. That this group is chartered to create a value-added network to link up all the manufacturers. And inside China, I don't know whether you know about this or not, they have multi-billion dollars of excess inventory storing in warehouse somewhere that they cannot sell. The main reason is because they don't have information of, you know, efficient information flow between the market demand as well as the manufacturing capacity. So the idea about this method is to provide readily available information among the manufacturer as well as the buyer. At the same time, we also want to create a bartering system so that people can trade rather than using a hard currency to buy and sell those products. The second area I think we're going to focus on is really to introduce web-based, mission-critical, and very high transactional applications to the financial segment as well as the manufacturing segment. I think those are the areas we see a tremendous amount of growth in selling particularly our software. So I think in sum, we are very bullish about the China market. As you also heard from various panels and discussions yesterday and today, the current economic crisis doesn't really hit China that hard, or not yet. So I think we are fairly bullish in 98 and moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we move on, perhaps we could dispatch an emissary to next door to ask them to either turn down the volume or be less funny. If somebody wants to take on that task, we can, in exchange, offer to turn down our volume a little.
No, I guess, or else I have to be a lot funnier. See if I can do this without tricking all over myself. My name is Richard Salem from Yahoo. What I'd like to do is talk more on the consumer side of the market and look at it from a, look at China from a global and regional perspective in terms of number of internet users, in terms of the amount of global content that's in the market now, and third, in terms of the online advertising market, which is the lifeblood of Yahoo. Just a quick kind of where Yahoo's at right now. We have 4 sites currently in Asia and hope to have 5 by the end of this year, the 5th being a Chinese language service. Looking at a report Savio has, I think, covered a little bit in terms of IDC, one of the leading research firms on the internet. Right now, in 1997, estimated 50 million users worldwide. So if you look at where Asia is at right now, ex-Japan, you're at a little over 3 million, so 3 to 4 million users. Very small part of the global pie, but as you see, growing considerably over the next 3-4 years. So growing from a little over 3 million to just about 17 million in the year 2001, as the world triples, goes from 50 million to 1.175 million dollars, a little over triple, Asia, non-Japanese Asia, goes up 5 times. So it's a considerable amount of growth in the region, and China being no exception. In terms of the way Yahoo views China, we right now our interest really is in the Chinese market. So going beyond just the mainland, looking at Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, and the ethnic speaking Chinese population in the US. If you look at the traffic to the leading Chinese internet sites now, whether it's the People's Daily or whether it's in Pao, about 50% of that traffic is actually being generated out of the US. So when we look at China, the market, we are looking at the Chinese market right now. As the PRC, as the mainland, makes up just a small portion of that. But as you see in terms of the user breakdown, the PRC is probably the second largest market, so somewhere between 400, Dennis mentioned up to a million users, nobody really knows, but growing considerably, very, very fast, and right on the heels of Taiwan in terms of overall usership. And taking the entire Chinese market, you're up to about 2 million users. And the interesting point is that you're over the size in terms of the Chinese language market now. You have more critical mass in a bigger market than you have the Korean language services at this point in time, a much more developed market. In terms of content, we start with the number of hosts, the number of unique servers in these markets. Again, if you look at the Chinese market as a whole, it is substantially bigger than the Korean market, a sizable market right now, and a very quickly growing internet market. And the interesting thing within that, within the Chinese host development, is that the fastest growing markets in that are the mainland and Hong Kong. And they are not just the fastest in that segment, but they're the fastest in the world. So they're some of the top five markets right now in terms of year-on-year growth in the number of hosts. What that translates to in terms of local content, the Chinese market now makes up, we estimate, about 25 to 30,000 sites, Chinese language sites worldwide. So not a huge number when you compare that to English language sites or even Japanese sites, but again, considerable growing as big as Korea and moving very, very fast. In terms of who, what the major sites are, well, it's not much different than it is in the English language world. So the search company, that have the biggest base, and then the major media companies. And we expect that to kind of continue on. But there really starting to be a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of individuals developing, you know, specific new content throughout the country. In terms of the overall media market, you look at China now, the fastest alone on the top. The fastest growing media market in terms of spending on TV, radio, newspaper, advertising in the world. Small in absolute terms, but again, when you look at the Chinese marketplace as a whole, about a $10 billion market. And that's a $10 billion market, and that puts it about the size of France, which is a very developed, very rich media market, 2 times as big as Italy. Again, what we would consider, you know, if you look at the media world and the number of media companies, both very, very substantial markets. Looking at China in particular, one of the things that stands out and gets us very excited is if you look at computer trade publishing, if you look at the SAIS, if you look at IBC, in terms of what they're publishing and the amount of advertising that's being generated, you can't see it there, that's about a $50 million market plus market. The mainland alone. So people like IDC say that their publications are read by more people than People's Daily now. So there is a huge groundswell and interest in the computer and the technology area. In terms of the online advertising market, the Chinese market is still at a very early stage. So it's very much an education, educational phase. You know, it's out there talking to clients, making the intel of the world, but also the FedExes and General Electric, and educating them in the value of the internet. So about at a similar level, though, where Korea is at right now, it's largely technology advertisers that are getting in, spending money on the internet, but we expect over the next year, kind of going into 99, that these markets, that the English and Chinese language markets in Asia are going to take the next step, start moving into the second phase of online advertising. We have much more consumer base and a lot more money flowing into the market. So when you look at Asia as a whole, the expectation is that by the year 2000, over $700 million is going to be spent online. Okay? That's the entire world of online spending today. In terms of 1997, the numbers are not yet, but the expectation is it's going to be $600 million in total online ad spending. So we're looking just at Asia in 3 years. Then you're going to have the same level of spending. So Japan, of course, on top, but you start to see the aggregation of Chinese language markets end up with roughly over $150 million. So very, very substantial if you are able to get in early, you know, develop substantial content in the following, then there is a very attractive market there. Finally, just something that we look at in terms of the overall size of the given market. We kind of use Yahoo as a proxy for the amount of internet users, people on the web coming from different markets. So in terms of looking at people coming into Yahoo.com, so our main English language service, we now see that the Chinese world, although mainland right now is a small part of that, it's probably one of the fastest growing elements in the Chinese community. But the number of Chinese users coming from Hong Kong, Singapore, the mainland, Taiwan, and U.S. ethnic Chinese speaking people is now twice as big as France in terms of people coming in from France. It's bigger than Korea now. And it's almost the size of Germany. And Germany is either the third or the fourth largest internet market in the world. So there is a very, very seductive market, a very sizable market growing very quickly. That's exciting for us. And you see no reason, despite all these problems and all the boom and doom that you hear in all the other sessions, we see kind of becoming next 2 years as a critical time and a great opportunity for Yahoo and for other companies in this market. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Kimi Yip, and I'm vice chairman of Chinese Internet Corporation, a company founded by the Chinese government and still controlled by the Chinese government. And as Dr. Simon and other speakers suggest that in China, two biggest problems today is, number one, local content in local languages. And give an example, if you are sitting here in Boston and get into the World Wide Web, and everything comes at you is in Arabic. And on matter, on subject matter, on city, they give out Arabic as well, which you don't really relate to it, and you don't stay on too long. And the same as people in China, and sitting in Beijing and Shanghai and every country, they are using English, and which is not their native languages, on city where they never lived to, like San Francisco or Boston, on that they don't understand. And so World Wide Web is not that useful to the Chinese practically, it's a lot harder. And our mission is to create what we call our product for China Wide Web. Instead of www, we call it CWW. Focus on creating local content in local languages. The second problem China is facing in raising internet is a majority of PCs is built at work. And less than 10% of Dr. Simon mentioned that will be at home. People don't have the money to buy a PC. If they are PC at home, they do not have the telephone line and the overseas to get on to the low light. so because of the two major problems, our company strategy is to focus on overcome those two major problems. And let me show you our overall business model. Our content is initially focused on business, since 90% of the PCR business user. And today we have exclusive agreement with most of the business content-oriented content provider, people like Reuters, Bloomberg, Financial Times in the UK, Thomson, and Thomson Canadian company, and we take the first case that is the first call, which is called a research estimate of a publishing company. And what we do is we aggregate and we translate. And it takes us almost a year to crack this translation process. Like, for example, Reuters gives us almost 300 or 400 stories per hour. And we need to departmental aggregate content and translating, and also translate it to the and make sure they obey the law in China. You know, like every country, China has their own set of law. They govern media, they govern content. And in addition to all this foreign content, we also take all the local newspaper. Today we have 5 newspapers from Hong Kong. We host them inside our server in Beijing, and the newspaper will be up by 6:30 in the morning. And it is a 6 coming in 4:30, right, 4:30 in the morning, and we're hosting our server. And before you wake up in Beijing, if you are a subscriber, and you can read any of the 5 newspapers and get all the information about Hong Kong. And we hope this content is just what we call a national intranet. So it's a close network with powerful servers. And today we have 5 major cities with a server on. And so the subscriber only has to make a local call. And we have partnership with the Ministry of Post Telecom that connects up to 200 cities, which they do in roaming. And they do not need to go over the Pacific Ocean getting to the World Wide Web. So it's a close network, but with email capability. And next month we're going to announce the leverage on our name, which is one of the biggest assets, China.com. And we'll launch a web-based email. And so in America, if you're AOL, subscribe to the AOL.com or Yahoo, Yahoo.com. And if you're Chinese, and if you're China, our slogan is One China, One China.com. So how do we make money? This is our business model. It's our saving one we have completed with the Ministry of Post Telecom, building up this national network that Dr. Simon was referring to. And actually, China is spending more money in laying more cable every year that would cover 1/3 of UK. And they would spend a lot of money to build up this national information infrastructure. And what this infrastructure stage 2 is to have enabling technology at a desktop. That's using with partner with people in Netscape that would convert the Netscape into double bytes, that would enable the Chinese translation and enable the Chinese content. And we're also working with a company called Quantcast, the company that's known to be a pioneer for aggregate content and push it down to the end user. And of course, you know, at the end, we are a content site. We are a content aggregator. We take the ceremony and we invert it. And that's how we think we will make money eventually. As a call system, our basic revenue is on subscription. And this is our first basic level on basic access. We get our content all in Chinese. They have a choice of over today. We have over 20 newspapers, including local newspapers in Shanghai, Beijing, plus newspapers overseas. like Financial Times, Nikkei, Hong Kong Newspaper, and the stock market and the stock quotations. And we have two levels of service, one is basic and the other one is premium service. Premium will provide real-time stock, real-time money market, and bond form information, and they were paying all for it. And as we're building up our subscribers and building up the eyeballs, advertising will become an important part as we have a critical mass. And of course, at the end of it, you know, we hope to develop a transaction-based businesses. Today, we have agreement with the top 16 of the top 20 global and Chinese media companies in the world, and companies such as Time, Financial Times, Dow Jones, and primary focus on games and businesses. There are 20 million businesses in China today, and we are not trying to get them all. We're focused on only the top 10%, which is the 2 million businesses. When you look at the two circle, the smallest circle is the top 10%. And of the top 10%, we usually focus on two segments. They are about 200,000 existing subscribers to the New China News Agency database, which is the New China News Agency, which is called Sinhua News Agency, is one of our funding shareholders. And we are in the process of converting the existing customers through the Sinhua database into our web-based services. The second segment of the customer we're very focused on is the foreign joint venture. Companies like GE, companies like Siemens, and the Japanese Hitotsu have 45 different joint ventures inside China. And we want to use our network to help them build the public internet. This is an overhead showing you how China loves new technology, and China built basically the mobile phones from scratch. And by the year, according here, by the year 2000, and you were expecting more than 20 million user mobile phones. And the same applies to pager. As you see, pager, they're approaching that of U.S. market and catching very closely. We have a different number here. We get this number, I believe, from DataQuest. It's super close to what Dr. Simon said in terms of, with the exception of Japan, China is the largest media market. And according to numbers that come in just a week ago, from the fourth quarter of 97, which is last quarter, and China is the only market that has shown more than 50% growth compared to other Asian Pacific markets because of the currency crisis. Singapore has slowed down a bit, and Indonesia and Malaysia, and basically did not grow at all. We're much more optimistic in terms of how many internet users will be. It's just as China continues to grow economically and as the part of the global trade, they have to use internet. They have to use mobile web to gain information to become more competitive. And our target is to go out here about 50% total internet user in China. There's some projection of the revenue in subscriptions, and our projection is to go up to 10% of the total subscription revenue. We're On the other side, China, as many mentioned, is the beginning of understanding how to use interactive media. And we have, the past 1 year, have some success in selling interactive ads on all of our websites. And the first major website we have launched is the July 1st Hong Kong Hanoi website. We are the official Chinese government site, and we have sold over 45 advertising sponsors, with more than half of that from China, local Chinese company that pay us money to sponsor the events. And we have over, at 10 days before the handover, we have over 10 million viewers into our website. Some of the company named Netscape, who is also here today, we have an exclusive agreement to host the Net Center, which is the Netscape website, in Chinese languages. And the first part, the first sponsors of the Net Center will be the NetGuide. In the US, the NetGuide is done by Yahoo, and we'll show you, how to get the most popular sites in travel, in entertainment, in sports, and we do the same thing, but in Chinese languages, but with Chinese content. And we've been developing the NetGuide for the past several months, and we hope to launch the NetGuide in the next 30 days. Quantcom, I mentioned before, we've been working for them for over a year now, and we have launched the Asia edition of Quantcom about a month and a half ago. And we have sold more than 15 advertisers, which demonstrates there are indeed demand for interactive advertising. As compared to Quantcom, when they launched about 2 years ago, they had only 4 paid advertisers. So we are very encouraged by what we have seen in the market. And the Quantcom Asia edition, you can any one of you can download. It featured actually 10 top markets in Asia, Philippine markets, Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, Korea, Hong Kong. And in China, we featured 2 markets, which is Shanghai Stock Exchange and also the Shenzhen Stock Exchange. In addition to the local content, and we have local newspapers, instead of getting New York Times or LA Times, you can have a choice of Hong Kong Standard or South China Morning Post. And all the company news you click on the Quantcom Network, you get all the information about any company you want to choose to track this stuff information, like Singapore Airlines, or Cathay Pacific, or Changong, and so forth. So, and we have a month and a half ago, we have today over 20,000 active viewers. And we're expecting to reach over 100,000 in the next several quarters. And we also work with Sun and Dana work with another guy, both of them is our shareholder. And we're very grateful for the American company have been supporting us. In addition to Sun and Dana work, we also have a venture capital firm based in New Jersey. They manage AT&T corporate money. And we have a Japanese company called Mitsui as our shareholder as well. Thank you very much.
Mr. If I take it from your presentation, are you right that China Internet Corporation is both seeking to be an internet service provider, the owner on the other end of dial-up lines, thanks to Bay Networks or Sun, getting into the hardware business there, and also a content provider, looking through other alliances that you described to actually provide content to people however they get on to the web in China. Is that right?
Well, we consider ourselves really a content player. Our company, most of our management team, believe we are a new media company, fundamentally content. Technology like working with Bay or Crystal is just an enabling tool to get We won't fuel our sustained revenue or viewership unless we fuel a very compelling content, a combination of content, both local and international. And we have to begin to learn how to extend the content to even more interesting things than just words as news or Bloomberg. And that's the reason we signed an exclusive agreement to promote the World Cup coming up in Paris. China probably has the largest soccer population in the world. And we signed an agreement with the French agency, France Press, in Paris. And they had the most reported couple of the events. And not only are we going to broadcast this in China by web in Chinese languages with real-time media, we would have the match real-time as well as for about 10 seconds on it, and we're developing it now, as well as the illustration of how each sport is being made and all the teams in that comparison with the 32 team. And we also were posting this to all the Chinese population around the world. And like Randy was mentioned, there are indeed, Chinese in America, in Europe, in Canada, and throughout Southeast Asia, they would prefer to reach a Chinese language-based website.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Chow, apparently this plan, the business plan presented that we just saw here, was appealing to Netscape. Is that right? Netscape went ahead, is now in an agreement, so that for the Netscape home site, perhaps this is what people getting onto the internet will see when they first plug in, because Netscape may well be the browser on their computer. They'll plug into a site that says Netscape, but actually designed by China Internet Corporation. Is that right?
In summary, actually, we are in a business partnership together. This was happening last year, mid-last year, where CIC and Netscape got together and an agreement signed, where they basically licensed our website and has exclusive right for the Chinese language and China territory to take the technology, take the content, translate in Chinese, at the same time put in their own content as well. So there's also some part of the agreement that we're going to share advertising revenue, which is also a very promising business potential for us.
Yeah. So, Mr. Salem, is that something that Yahoo might be looking to do? I understand that Yahoo just recently set up a mirror site in Singapore, but that's English language from the main Yahoo.com site. So as you move forward with plans to go for a Chinese language-based thing, do you think you might be talking to Mr. Yip?
We've had numerous discussions with Mr. Yip. Mr. Yip and CIC are certainly one of the leading, certainly the best funded, and have the most substantial partnerships of any organization working in the Chinese world right now, in terms of people doing Chinese language services. So our initial kind of strategy right into the Chinese market is kind of as I scoped out, to focus more on the Chinese language from a global standpoint than specifically on a country market. If you look at any of the specific country markets right now, Taiwan being the most active as an internet market, none of them, Taiwan included, have enough individual content specific to those countries, have enough users at this point, have enough online advertising base to make them, at least from our perspective, to make them an attractive business proposition.
Yeah.
But, however, looking at the Chinese market, from a global sense, it's a very attractive market.
So that actually puts the question quite squarely. We heard from Mr. Yip essentially the intranet theory of building the internet in China, because you have a China-wide web and the boundaries could be defined very much by China geographically, versus the internet theory that says, no, we want to exploit the international aspect of it and the cross-boundary aspect to have all sorts of crossover of boundaries. Dr. Simon, you were retained by Mr. Salem. He was looking for your advice. He says, which theory is really going to pan out here? Is this the intranet theory? Do we want to get a link with somebody that is distinctly China-based? Or should we just stick with Chinese language and go multiple countries? What would you say?
Actually, the response would have been different maybe 6 months ago. which is, I think a lot has to do with the fact of what's happening in Asia. I think actually the idea of building a network onto the so-called Chinese network is actually a very interesting idea. The most powerful foreign investors, the most powerful business interests so far in China in terms of foreign investment really are coming from the overseas Chinese business community. And it seems to me that anyone who can tap into that business community would find themselves in a very ideal position. So I think there is some legitimacy in that. At the same time, I think there's just, as everyone looks at the China market, there's just such a tremendous opportunity there that I don't think you could actually go wrong in either case. I think really it's not an either-or proposition. It's basically how you can work both simultaneously, because I think that you would not want to ignore the regional overseas Chinese opportunity.
Yes. Now, there's another either-or proposition that has somewhat been sounded here. I guess people are somewhat confused, let me just see, between ad revenue and transactions. For instance, Mr. Yip talked about transactions as the base of the upside-down pyramid that would eventually, once there was a critical mass of subscribers, lead the way to ad revenues. Whereas we've also heard from the likes of Yahoo or perhaps even Netscape saying ad revenues are the way to go, and then eventually once people are viewing the site, maybe you can start charging them for it. Which way do you think the pyramid should go?
I'm basically a transaction-oriented person. I think that actually given the nature of China's commercial infrastructure, the immaturity of it, I think that there's even very basic kinds of transactions to kick them off will actually be a very useful way to go. I think the advertising will come as people begin to see it become a viable mechanism. Just like, for example, when television all of a sudden became popular in China, all of a sudden the advertisements came, and you see all sorts of bizarre advertisements on Chinese TV for dumb trucks and bulldozers, as well as consumer products. So I think, you know, we may find some very odd kinds of things being advertised on the Chinese websites, but I think the transaction is the way to go.
And just out of curiosity, were you saying that 6 months ago?
No, I wasn't saying that 6 months ago.
Okay.
If I can answer that, there's two aspects on the transaction side. One is business to business and one is to consumer, right? So as we've seen here in the U.S. and Western Europe, more developed internet market, the business-to-business is the first to take off, and I think that is kind of a large part of what you're talking about in terms of driving revenue and driving a lot of activity on the internet. In terms of a more consumer-based business like Yahoo, you know, as we've seen in the Western world right now, it's really been online advertising that has been the precursor, that's been the supporter in terms of initial stage of development. Now we're getting to a point where we can leverage off that user base and leverage as more and more consumer-based transaction services like Amazon TV Now are becoming successful.
Yeah. I've also noticed you mentioned a number of hits from China and ever-growing onto the main Yahoo.com site, the English language site, or its mirror site in Singapore. As you tailor content for that site, there is somewhat of an on-off proposition with respect to whether China decides to block the site for whatever reason. And we saw, I was actually very interested to see that Mr. Yip had listed as content partners Time, CNN, sites that in other English incarnations had been or occasionally blocked. Do you find yourself, as you're making decisions about what to put in Yahoo, conscious that there might be an axe hanging over that if you step a little too far, you could lose all of your Chinese traffic?
We tend to be, fervent believers in the independence and, everyone's individual right to express their opinions on the web. So that's the founding of Yahoo. That's the kind of the grassroots that made Yahoo what it is. So we've very much taken the stance that we're an aggregator. We are a place that people go to find information, right? We're not the ones actually generating the CNN stories or the dissident sites, the Chinese dissident. So we're a way, we're kind of funnel gateway to that information. So at least in with the site in Singapore, we've been able to work with the government in the sense that they are not requiring Yahoo to censor itself, but of course they have their own social concerns and have gone about blacklisting certain sites that you cannot, although they are listed in Yahoo, you cannot access them. So yes, it's a big issue for us, and the mainland presents the biggest challenge, so we're kind of waiting to see how that all works out. But the general view, at least to date, is that the Chinese government has not blocked Yahoo, but they have blocked
a number of content sites, whether Facebook or CNN is one of them, that people cannot access from the mainland, but they can get everything else through Yahoo and other and our other services, similar services.
Yeah. This actually may be a good time, Mr. Yip, to ask about the late December regulations that were announced or newly issued with respect to Internet content. Can you give us basically a summary of just what they say and how they might affect the actual average Internet surfer?
I don't remember exactly what it says. It's generally a regulation in terms of content the government would not want anyone to produce locally that would violating the media law in China, as well as they would use the internet to let some state secret to get sent out. And just like any country, you know, every country has the responsibility to protect your own national security, the same as the U.S. government. And the same as every country has the responsibility to promote social stability. And internet is a troubled thing for Chinese government because internet is indeed a convergence of many different disciplines and industries. Talking about conversion of color, communication, conversion of software, media, content. And in China, everyone wants to get their hand into regulating internet. And the public security and the Ministry of Information, they say, wow, gee, you know, this is a content place. That is my jurisdiction. I want to take control. The Ministry of Electronics say, wow, this is really software. That's my turf. And then here come the Ministry of Health Telecom. Wow, there's networking. You get all the router, you get all the long distance phone calls into the US, and I want a piece of it. So China still internally is debating. And as China become more open, China wants to get an issue with the WTO, and China cannot ignore the development of the World Wide Web. And our mission is to how to work to the advantages of adopting the World Wide Web technology to promote business communication, to promote trade. And that's the reason we go all out to get content from all parts of the world. Content from America, content from Europe, and content from Japan. And to get China closer to the world and the world closer to China. And actually we have two phases, if you will. We have a phase facing inside, which is the TWW, the closed internet, and we have an external phase. The external phase is really China.com. We will be very soon to announce a series of content which will be aggregated from China and translated in English and facing the world. So anything you ever want to know about China and the way you ask, come to our site. Because China has to tell the world what's happening. It's important. And there's no other desk medium in the world that you can see in your home 24 hours at your own leisure. And we'll end a number of those partnerships where our content will be in different format, in a fun time special edition for anybody who wants to know about China. It'll be a special channel. Will be on the other popular websites. For example, we're negotiating with practically with, you know, ongoing discussion with Yahoo, of course. But when you look at the number top 10 sites as well, we either we're in agreement with them or we're in a very close agreement. And because it's important that we bring China to the world from that point of view.
Mr. Yip, you've made some reference, I guess quite slightly, to the so-called regulatory overlap that's going on within China as various industries and regulatory agencies each want to get their cut. Maybe this is a question best asked to Dr. Simon. Between the Ministry of Posts and Telephones, the MEI, Ministry of Telephone, Film and Radio, I guess even Marinko, a wing of the owned by the military, has gotten involved in a joint venture with Prodigy. If somebody were coming to you and saying, I want to get into China, who do I need to bind forces with and not end up having faced the wrong debt 5 years from now? What kind of assurances can you give? What advice do you give?
I think we look at this as a kind of pieces of a puzzle in many ways. I think and we're discussing networks in a lot of ways. Basically, what we're talking about is a network of relationships. I think that any successful business in China basically is built on some kind of partnership network that really involves multiple players anyway. So any foreign company that's going to come in and play in this area basically is of necessity. It's probably going to have to provide the glue to kind of hold these players together one way or another, or else basically what happens is that today, you know, you're free and unencumbered, but tomorrow someone's going to eat your rice bowl. So basically what you have to do is you're going to have to ally yourself and make relationships with all the players. It's just like, for example, something like Iridium in China, the same concept. Motorola and the other players involved in Iridium had to make friends with the space industry people and the MPT people and the MEI people. It's the same thing in this kind of case as well. I think you can't just walk in the door and hold hands with one player. China is actually, we talk about China being a communist country, but it's highly pluralistic when it comes time for all of these players to sink their teeth into something they consider to be their interest. So you can't avoid it. You've got to play the game, build the network, provide the glue, provide the cement, and then I think you can see yourself walking into the future.
Does that suggest something about the nature of venture capital and ventures in China that may be different from elsewhere, and that is it structured such that you might have to invest a lot more time and energy and maybe even money up front before you might be seeing a return? Is there some structural difference you can point to between trying to get into the Chinese market and other markets?
Well, I think, you know, what you're starting to see in China is a highly competitive business environment. In fact, the intensification of competition in China right now probably is one of the hallmarks of the business environment. We found in dealing with our clients, I mean, everyone goes into China thinking they're going to make big money, and or they go in just the opposite. They tell their bosses they're not going to make any money for 5 years, and those who are pessimistic tend to find that there's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and those that are optimistic sometimes tend to be naive. So there is, again, there's a kind of, you know, Wu Wei, the middle way, and that is basically, I think, good business basics always pays off. But basically, you've also got to understand, again, this kind of pluralism in China, that if you don't play the game and cement those relationships together, basically you're not going to have a long-term future in China. Because most agreements in China, most of these relationships, basically, I think, tend to be what I would call self-obsolescing. That is, from the moment the ink is dry on one relationship, the Chinese partner has an interest to look to another relationship, because there's always something more interesting coming along. And in these kinds of relationships, what I think we need to look at is that what's going to be the staying power of any one of them. And so whether it's whatever the organizational partnership is, you have to constantly revitalize and re-nurture the relationship, because it's a very fluid business environment. And there's always going to be, change is ubiquitous. And if you don't learn how to live with that change in China, you're not going to be able to survive.
This is the what have you done or signed with us lately.
Right,
period,
basically.
Doing business. Another form of competition that we're certainly familiar with here has been the browser wars. And so long as we have somebody from Netscape on the panel, one can't help but wonder. I understand you're now giving away Netscape in China, the communicator package. Is your competition doing the same, and how are the dynamics of the battle different there than they might be here?
Let me just do an official survey here. Who? Please raise your hand if you're using IE, Microsoft Internet Explorer, that's the only one. Folks, only about 20%. As you can see, the service is highly trained and biased. But anyway, in China, I think Microsoft is getting as aggressive in China and elsewhere in the rest of the world. What we have seen in the past, they spend a lot of money promoting something is apparently free of charge. Our market share has dropped, but in the, like, 2 years ago, when I talked to an official, talked to CERNET, one of the official ISP licensee, their head actually, and this is for the academic usage of internet. He basically told me about 80, 85 or 90% of internet access are using Netscape browser. So it actually dropped quite a bit to about 65-70%. So the reason announcement worldwide will hopefully keep Netscape's market share, hopefully actually expand a little bit worldwide. And we're very bullish actually, and I'm very hopeful we'll do the same thing in China. But Microsoft is very, very tough competitor.
At this point, why don't we open up questions for the audience? How about over here? Yeah.
I'm Han Jingga from MBA student at Yale University. My question is for Dr. Stein. You mentioned some of the examples of transformers that you see occurring in the future within China. And granted that the business-to-business model seems to be the one that is generating most revenue here in the U.S., what events or events do you see as necessary to facilitate the consumer demand within China, given the fact that only 10% of PCs are actually sold to individual consumers?
Okay, I don't know if everyone heard him, but he was asking about e-commerce and what kind of precipitating events might stimulate further expansion of e-commerce. I think that the first kicker obviously is going to be a price point in terms of PCs. That is, if the price of PC comes down to, I think, equivalent to $500 US, somewhere along the line, I think that's going to make a big difference, and that'll be number one. Number two is, I think it's the content itself, that is, the kinds of things that people are buying will have to be of the sort that people feel comfortable in terms of the quality and the guarantees and the reliability. I think that'll be number two. And number three will be the commercial infrastructure, the financial arrangements, the credit card clearing systems and things of that sort. Right now, those are in a very, very immature state, and so I think what's going to have to happen is that For these things to really work, obviously you need the financial mechanism to allow them, the credit card system, and you're also going to need the security attached to that in terms of the banking system. So those are the three things I think that are going to have to happen. If there's a fourth thing I would add, and that is that somebody in China is going to have to take the high ground. Maybe it's the Ministry of Internal Trade or somebody, maybe it's MPT, I don't know who it might be, but somebody is going to have to, in a sense, set the game, you know, in other words, define the new rules that this is a commercial infrastructure that's being built. And I think that probably that's going to happen through, I think, the role, maybe even companies like Anderson Consulting and some of the consulting companies may in fact play that role in China, and that is that by encouraging this kind of mechanism to develop business may in fact set a standard that becomes attractive to China in terms of foregoing the traditional retail buildup that would have taken place without e-commerce and moving quickly and rapidly to a kind of e-commerce infrastructure. That's a kind of philosophical thrust. I mean, it's kind of, people have to feel comfortable with it, but it's going to have to be a message that's going to be delivered on a regular basis to people for them to understand what's actually being done here. It's not just some marginal thing at the periphery of the business environment.
Another question? Right back there. The person in the tie.
I use that kind of knowledge here. Okay, now my question is regarding to the period and serving.
Well, no one can ignore and will be a fool if not Bill Gates.
He was with Barbara Walters last night. Just for
Microsoft itself and what a machine for earning, which is always going to be earning contributions. As a matter of fact, I was in the government not too long ago, looking up there, so the story and the way how we deal with Microsoft, the cinema how we deal with Microsoft versus Oasis. From our point of view, you know, we are a content aggregator, and we want to provide the most best-in-telling content, the best selection of choice. So we have, in the case of Oasis, where we're both, even though they hate each other. And actually, that's a federal investigation of grand jury in New York City on both of them. And so they come to the NLB, you know, from China and Beijing in the same table. And we'd love to have Microsoft and Netflix here as well. As a matter of fact, today you can use the ID, even though Netflix is our digital browser. And we spend a lot more time and we put a lot more value into it. But you want to use ID, you need to come access to TWW. And our philosophy with Microsoft is to want to do a fair and honest partnership that is good for everyone. And Microsoft, as we all know, they always want to have their way. and our discussion with them has to be continued. And particularly, we also work with fund accounts. As you know, fund accounts is very close with Microsoft, and it's a preferred channel on the activists. So in some ways, indirectly, we work with Microsoft on Fondly. And we hope to be able to include some kind of a partnership with Microsoft that would be fair and that would not have a lot of engagement attached to it.
To put a spin on that question for Mr. Chow, much of the battle between Microsoft and Netscape, or Microsoft and Sun, has been over standard setting and who actually shall have the power to set the standard and be the first to incorporate these standards into browsers. Is there a similar battle going on over the standard for Chinese language character depiction or translation in the browser? Do the browsers behave identically that way, and can we expect that they will in the future?
To my knowledge, I think the Chinese character handling is essentially a standard. The Chinese government as well as other Asian languages actually have agreed to use something called Unicode. Essentially, the one code page that you can display simplified traditional Korean as well as Japanese characters. So that is a known standard known technology that Netscape and Microsoft have adopted in their mobile products. So I don't think that's a critical issue. But the key thing, there's really still some subtle differences in terms of translating, whether you use a Taiwanese-based company to do translation or a Chinese-based company to do translation, then you see the quality and reflect the actual usage and the verbiage of the different user communities. But otherwise, I don't see any advantage in gain from based on the language play, but more of a local usage or your local features, I think, can incorporate in the product in the future.
Other questions? Yeah, right here.
My name is Xu.
Yeah.
I work at the International Communication Company. I have a question for Juliet. My question is that you have presented in your presentation China Internet Corporation is very much focused on providing content in Asian language. So as you have listed, you have like 16 to 20 top sources for the company. So how are you managing such large volume translation efforts? Do you use real-time translation technology such as machine translation or PM translation memory? Because from my experience, because we're so much involved in IT, our clients are so much involved in IT industry, we even use a bilingual website for Chinese Connect, but we very much focus on very one section, which is the software industry. So we experience quite a lot of difficulty to manage the translation effort, because for example, like Google, I assume you like to pick up the story from the terminal, and not only you have to ensure the quality, the accuracy, as well as the speed. So I'm wondering, do you operation using technology to manage your
So the question was from a member of the audience who actually works with machine translation or translation to English and Chinese, and asks Mr. Yip, how do you do it? How do you do it? And how do you do it so accurately?
The New China News Agency, their business is in translation. If America has a new president, whether it's the official Chinese translation for that new president of America, New China News Agency do that. And they've been in translation business for over the past 75 years. They translate from 7 languages in the world, Arabic, Chinese, German, French, Spanish. And they have a mix of different technology they adopt over the years. And we subcontract all the work to them. And they have in Beijing over 300 translators. As they translate the story from around the world, they take the French news agency story, they translate them. And they themselves broadcast new stories. They broadcast over 1,000 stories a day. So in that way, that's another reason we work with them is under company, because they know content. They know the difficulty and the process of translation. For example, story, we classify into two different types of story. Story is urgent, and we have to get them out within 20 minutes. Do you have a memory server? And it's not just mechanical translation, because you have to look at the subject matter. Matter on microbiology, like some soil microbiology, they go into specialists. They know the subject matter, and as well as the language and so forth. And then they are other sensitive matter, they go in and they classify. So they have very deliberate process from a system standpoint and just purely technology standpoint, which they have in a way protected. I took actually Michael Bloomberg to Beijing and we walked through the whole process. He was so amazed, because you know, very new Chinese agency has 118 offices around the world. In New York we have two offices, one at UN, and Washington was an office, and Los Angeles an office, an office in Geneva. Even Panama, when we do not have a formal diplomatic relationship with country, and we have new Chinese agents there, and they have translated a little case in the country on specific site, sensitive matter, and we have this global network. All the information comes through into a massive database, which they have developed over the years on many of the indexes of story and so forth. So I took him and walked through the whole process. And I believe he was so impressed. And then because he was insist on taking place and give us to us the hopes. And the government point of view is we cannot, and we need to do the translations. And so each of the content agreements we have done took us years. Like with Time Warner almost took us 2.5 years. Going back. Because they are indeed, you know, time represent being the American spirit, if you will, the institution, one of the finest and meanest institutions in American history. And there's a lot of concern on censorship, there's a lot of concern of translating wrong, you know, misleading the original intent. And so that's mainly the issue that in the content business, more than just a pure technology, machine-to-machine translation.
And was the resolution of that, that it would, the translation would rest with Time or the CNN, or did you all end up saying you could take care of it?
With Time, it's very complicated because they have so many editors and editor-in-chief and so much publication. So we have not, depending on which title, some title they originally had to change. Not simplified version, the traditional version, I believe Asia Week is one of their titles. And we agreed to accept that, but we still translate it back to simplified. The same as even with the French, and they have the Malaysian translated the traditional Chinese, because when we broadcast to the world, we have two languages. We have the simplified version and also the traditional version. Which is the same that if you look at Chinese.com today, you have the font, you can see the Chinese traditional and simplified for our July 1st stuff. Because they are many part of the world, they still use the traditional.
Great. I'm afraid we're out of time. So thank you all very much. If we get to take this panel next year, perhaps the answers will be, again, very different. Thank you very much. Great. I mean, this is that.